is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Bahamas. Good morning, good morning. It is Friday, February the 19th, 2021. You're listening to On the Clock with Aaron Green on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Let me remind you how you can tune in and stay tuned in or comment or call in. We're streaming live, audio, and video on guardiantalkradio.com. You can listen on TV, on Cable Bahamas Channel 969, or on Flow Channel 612. Or you can download the Guardian Radio app for your Apple or Android smart devices and listen to our audio feed or watch us on our video feed right there on the Guardian Radio app. You can text us on the Guardian Radio text line. That's 422-GR96, 422-4796, and that line is powered by BTC. Standard text rates apply. You can also call us at 323-6232, 323-6232, 325-4316, or 326-4259. Welcome to On the Clock, where we engage organizations, institutions, social and cultural leaders, and ordinary people to better understand the impact of public policy, private sector development, and emerging social and consumer trends. On the Clock, we have conversations that help us understand and navigate a rapidly changing Bahamas. So I'm looking at this morning's papers, and I'm very disappointed. I'm extremely disappointed. Tribune's headline, "It's Getting Dirty." So a press statement from the leader of the opposition about politics, media campaign, social media campaigning by parties. And the headline is, PLP leader says FNM running a quote, unquote, garbage juice campaign. First of all, why would you even use that language, sir? I mean, you're really perpetuating the same thing you say that you're critiquing. Why would you even use that language? It's unnecessary. Second of all, I'm going to need both the PLP and the FNM to step back for a moment and stop and acknowledge that both parties have historically engaged in this type of behavior. First, foremost. Secondly, demand of all of your party members, even rogue affiliates, that this stops right now, right? That's the only response to it. Both of your parties need to shut down your quote-unquote war rooms. You need to shut down all rogue elements. You need to make sure that nobody is getting paid out of your party's purses to engage in this type of behavior. The onus is on you, Mr. Brave Davis, and you, Mr. Minnis, to stop this behavior now. Over the last few hours, I've seen a number of videos using people's perceived sexuality to attack them. What it's really doing is it's creating a more hostile or a less safe environment, not just for LGBT people, not just for gay people, not just for homosexuals, but for all vulnerable people. right? What you were doing is you were creating an environment of hostility and fear for people who already have been made to feel like they do not belong. Just in case nobody out there gets why I could be a little upset about this, I am a homosexual woman in the Bahamas. And this type of language and behavior creates a less safe and a more hostile environment for me and other people like me. I want to leave a short note for the chairman of the FNM party, who is quoted as saying, the FNM doesn't engage in those types of politics. Before I leave, I'm going to remind you of two things that occurred immediately prior to the 2017 general election. One is an FNM rally in Grand Bahama, moments of which were captured on video, where the now Senator Jasmine Darius is recorded on stage in FNM colors with a tirade of vitriolic and homophobic rhetoric. Unfortunately, what was also captured in that video were two images, one of the former Deputy Prime Minister, a giggle, a kikiin, and one of the now Prime Minister, seeming very uncomfortable in the moment. I was shocked and surprised to learn of Ms. Darius's appointment as a senator after witnessing that display of behavior. The second incident, prior to the 2017 general election, a series of ads, both print and video ads, were released by a group with the initials TIP. And those ads use Nazi Germany, Nazi imagery placed upon the bodies of PLP members at the time, PLP members' heads placed upon the bodies of caricatures and animation in Nazi uniforms to represent Nazi soldiers. And I took to the media to remind whoever it was, because at the time they were printed, the authors of the ads were anonymous to me, that this type of behavior is irreprehensible. It is not tolerated. It is not acceptable. And even if you feel that the behavior, the conduct of members of the PLP could be likened to the behavior of the Nazi Party, you have a responsibility to explain to your audience exactly what it is you're trying to say. So, Mr. Kulmer, I know that this is a new FNM administration, but I am not certain that the party has shifted or changed sufficiently for me to believe that you are a different party. But since you are a new chairman, I'm going to remind you, or I'm going to encourage you, to sit down and do some research so you could understand what the party is that you're representing, and so that you could lay down the law and let your party members and affiliates know that right-thinking Bahamians will not be involved in this type of behavior. And we will know if you've done it or not. We will know. We will quickly get a sense of whether the leaders in the FNM and the PLP have done their due diligence and caused the members of their party to discipline themselves. We will know. And I'm not leaving out any of the other third parties, right? I'm not leaving you all out of this mix either. Because already we have a party that isn't a party, with members out there attacking others in social media. I need you all to know this. This is a part of the political culture. It is bigger than any one party. We as a people need a concerted effort to shut this behavior down. And for this one, the onus is on us at the top. Those who have access to the airwaves, social leaders, religious leaders, political leaders, leaders in government, if you manage a space, take responsibility and manage that space and keep it free from all forms of violence, especially this petty political politicking. It is unnecessary. It is dangerous. It is violent. And it hurts real people like me and people you love. Kermit, let's roll into a break. And when I get back from this break, guys, I've got an exciting, young, dynamic guest joining me today to talk about work readiness and employment preparation. We'll be back on the clock in a moment.
It's happening, and it's all straight talk with no chaser. As Stephen Miller is unleashed on your radio each weekday, 11 a.m. to 12 p.m., right here on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. It's going to be smart talk, ideas, and innovation. Each weekday, 11 a.m. to 12 p.m., only on Guardian Radio, your station for fresh news and smart talk. Trust me, you're not going to want to miss this.
Meet Jackie. Jackie's a hard worker with a steady income, but she has a personal loan and multiple credit cards to pay off. To keep her account current, Jackie opted for a loan from Fidelity Bank to consolidate her debt into one monthly payment and earn interest on a built-in savings account. Be like Jackie. Call 356-7764 to book a complimentary financial coaching session. Fidelity also offers virtual assistance. Fidelity, we're good for you.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
Good morning, Bahamas, and welcome back to On the Clock with Erin Green. I just had to get that off my chest. I think I want to have a more sustained dialogue with political advocates, people who say they are political activists and members of parties, right? I want to have a more sustained dialogue about, more than that, right, about party communications, about campaigning, and then that as a subsect of the discussion. I think it's so important. I got two quick texts here. The first one is, thank you, great show as usual. Question how politicians get so super sensitive in the political circle. Politicians have become soft with a capital S. I remember when politicians used to have alligator skin. I miss those days. Well, there's a lot to be interrogated in there, like a whole show's worth. What I can say is something has definitely shifted in the political culture, and we got to figure out what went wrong or why we shifted that way and how we can shift in the directions we want to shift in. Another text, Erin, don't forget, Minister Brother calling. Oh, okay, so don't forget about statements senior FNM made. They were horrible. I'm not even going to repeat them. They were horrible. And they were not sufficiently denounced. You're absolutely right. They were not sufficiently denounced. Neither did we interrogate why they were so horrible and the potential impact of those statements. Yeah, I got you. I got you. So, you know who doesn't get enough recognition in New Providence? Especially by me, because I stay talking about these politicians. Sanitation workers. That's right, who we like to call garbage men. They literally clean up after us. They are essential workers. All the workers I meet are professional, polite, friendly, always awesome to interact with. You know who else is great? BC workmen. Like workmen mean workwomen too. The linemen, the emergency staff. They even let me borrow one of their staff members to take a look at why my elderly neighbor that lived alone had no power for 7 days. You see, the staff at BC, they're great. The power, well, but Let me tell you about a group of people single-handedly holding the country together. Security officers. I went to a government agency this week. I knew what I needed to do, but had no idea how to do it. The security officer fielding questions heard two key words and set to work. He let me know that he was going to look for a form. He came back and said, like he suspected, there were no more forms available at this office. When I said I needed a bit more information, he directed me to the correct office. At government offices, they provide information about services, timelines, and procedures. At banks, they provide COVID protocol services, direct clients to staff, and manage public spaces. These people are providing professional services. And they take chafing from the public. And they have to deal with the 3 Score and 10 gang. And they one of the most unruly gangs in the country. And they do it with a smile always. Now, I'm sure there have been many improvements in the security industry, but I'm certain they are not being paid what they are worth. Most of them go beyond their job descriptions to ensure that the businesses they work for continue to function and the customers that frequent them have pleasant and safe experiences. And I'm almost certain these skills that they are displaying in the workplace are not being taught at entry level on the job. So like I said, my guest today, Kermit, my guest, she's joined the call? Awesome. My guest today is a dynamo. She teaches at multiple institutions and even runs a couple of businesses. She's also an alma mater of QC, like me, QC Comet. Kentisha Ward, welcome to the show.
Hi, Erin. Thank you so much for having me. Yes, I am a QC Comet for all the sackers out there. No offense. thank you so much for having me. But definitely, I am teaching at BTBI, so I have hands-on access to the same workers who you are actually speaking about.
So listen, the first question I want to ask you is it a myth that young Bahamians are lazy or untrainable?
I disagree. I heavily, heavily disagree.
It is a myth, right?
That's a notion that is passed around the expat community. And I've heard it in different capacities when I've worked in hotels and different capacities with a lot of expats. I hear people say Bahamians are lazy. And I don't think so. I think our culture is more of a quality of life than a quality of work culture compared to maybe the American society. So they have that outlook. But I don't think Bahamians are lazy. I think the challenge comes with if we put people in places where they enjoy working or enjoy doing what they like, I think they will do well.
Right. I think of it as a, what we call like subsistence labor model, right? It's cultural. When we go out to fish, we go out to fish to feed ourselves for a few days. We're not going out necessarily on a commercial fishing trip where the aim is to capture as much fish as we can in the limited amount of time.
Agreed. And I see it happen in the islands with my business now, you know, with fruits and vegetables. You have persons who will go and pick, but they will only pick for one day. And I can't find them for the rest of the week because they've gotten what they need for that one day.
Right, right. And so I agree with you. I also source and sell local produce. And I spent a lot of time talking about why I want you to do something a certain way, like shifting the culture, right? And initially, I got frustrated with the people I was working with, but then I realized that they employ a different sort of approach to work.
You said it right, culture.
Yeah, right. So tell me some of the things that young people are interested in doing in 2021. What are the types of jobs and careers young Bahamians are aspiring for?
What I have seen coming up lately throughout my classes at BTBI, we have a lot of persons who are interested in IT, which I really, really like. We have a lot of persons who are interested in fashion design as well and entrepreneurship. And I think the move towards entrepreneurship is they're seeing the need to be their own leaders and their own boss.
Absolutely. Do you think we are providing the training opportunities to meet the sort of the needs of these young people? And secondarily, do you think we are creating an environment where young people can realize their own entrepreneurial dreams?
Perfect question. I think we are trying, but we have to have the knowledge ourselves to be able to expose other persons to the knowledge. I think that we're far behind in the tech industry. In the Bahamas, do we really create a space for tech engineers to come up? Does that happen from elementary school straight until trade school? And when you get to BTVI, how many levels of tech is actually available for young persons? And I ask myself every day, do we create the space for Mark Zuckerbergs and Jeff Bezos? I think BTVI provides a foundation, but even more than the foundation, I think what's important, Aaron, is the exposure.
Yeah.
We can't aim towards things that we don't know exist. And here in our country, I think we're just so far behind in the digital revolution. So I think it's just more about creating a space and creating a culture to invite these types of knowledge in so that we can expand on them.
Absolutely. So two things. A few years ago, there was an article in the Jamaica Gleaner, right, asking this question: will we ever be able to produce a Mark Zuckerberg from this region, right? And the article explores the barriers to Mark Zuckerberg's being born here, right? And one of those barriers in the Bahamas is the energy crisis and the cost of living, right? That young people are so focused or like they are burning energy, taking care of so many things that they never have the energy to focus on innovation, right? And exploring new ideas and new themes. And so parents are working so hard to meet energy bills and other bills in, for us, the sixth highest cost of living country in the world, that they don't have the time to focus on their children or the resources to create an environment for them to succeed.
So, Aaron, I have a question. How does the young child in Africa who is working with plastic bottles to create a windmill respond to something like that?
Well, I can tell you not what the child can do, but what we can do as the adults, right, to help that child in Africa with recycled plastics working on windmills. Because here's what I would do in the Bahamas for that young child that's interested in tech, but lives in a household that doesn't have regular access to power, or in a household where he cannot secure his electronic goods and make sure they won't be used by someone else or stolen, right?
Because this, Aaron, what you're talking about, this happens in Africa all the
right.
time, but it doesn't limit them from being the being tech leaders in certain places and wanting to innovate the current problem that they're having and find a solution for the problem. So the Mark Zuckerbergs of the Bahamas or the Jamaicas are the ones who are going to come in and change that. They're
right.
not the ones who are going to go away and get knowledge and stay over there and create an electricity company over there. They're going to come back and they're going to change that. But we have to influence that person from in the home that they can be that person who's going to do that.
But
they're not going to be the doctor. They're not going to be the lawyer. They're not going to be the person at McDonald's. They're not going to be the parliamentary secretary or the politician. They're going to go away and make a change and come back and bring back an energy revolution.
So here's the model I'm thinking of, right? I'm going to take three boys and three girls from every public school in the country, right? Start there. And I'm going to create a boarding school, a residential school facility, right? And it will be tech focused, right? And we will ensure that the school has three power supply options: solar, wind, and the traditional infrastructure connection to BPL, right? So that I create a space for students to learn about tech, and the first thing that I am going to guarantee is that they never go offline, right? That's how I'm going to do it. That's how I'm going to break the cycle and shift the culture. in the Bahamas. They got a bunch of kids who are interested in tech because they live in a tech environment. Culturally, all the things they see coming in over their phone, all the things they see coming over the TV, right? It's tech environment. They are ontologically American. They might as well be American. But where they live, where they put their foot down, right, ain't got no power. So they think in American dreams, but they live in Bahamian reality, right? I'm going to create a boarding school, a residential facility, a tech school, and I'm going to put them there. Because to shift the culture, to create a tech industry, I have to train kids in an environment where they never go offline. Still there?
Agreed. But Aaron, what if you think something like this? Mm-hmm. What if you send those five kids to five different technology universities to be immersed around different persons who come from technology hubs around the world?
But no, that's
when
the second
back
step.
Home, they will have no.
Look at how I have to hire you. Sorry, go on.
So, but that's stuff that you don't have to pay for. One thing I realized, growing up here in the Bahamas, we don't have exposure to everything that goes on around the world.
Mm-hmm.
Currently, right now, there's a technology revolution that's happening outside of the Bahamas. And none of my students can tell you what a cryptocurrency is or what cryptocurrency is.
Mm-hmm.
But being able to go away and be exposed to these persons who are 100% involved in these different niches that we don't know about, it gives us the need or the thirst to want to know more. When I went away to university, I remember we had to do a project, and I always tell people about this project. My teacher, she said, you know, I want you to do a project on an industry or on a niche in business that people don't really know about.
Mm-hmm.
Aaron, guess what this project was on? Bitcoin. I went on the internet and I found something that a lot of people knew in the industry that people are talking about that they didn't know. It was Bitcoin. At that time, Bitcoin was worth 49 cents. I had no knowledge of cryptocurrency, stock trading, anything. In the Bahamas, the only thing they teach you about is Arawaks.
Mm-hmm.
And the cacique and all of those things. They don't teach you about this type of technology out there. So I learned about Bitcoin, 49 cents. I didn't pursue it. Aaron, every morning I wake up and I see Bitcoin at $50,000. I have to reanalyze how to start my day. But that's due to lack of knowledge and lack of exposure.
Yeah.
But now I knew about it since I was around other people who were speaking about it. So as soon as I came back to the Bahamas, I was looking for different ways to get involved in it.
Yeah.
So if you expose people to persons or groups of people or to knowledge, they can then become submersed in it and then come back and then spread it to other persons here in the Bahamas and implement different things. So you have persons like Dr. Jillian Bethel, who went away to college in China.
Mm-hmm.
And in China, they started doing different things with Bitcoin and red packets. And when she came back, she said, the Bahamas is 702 islands. We don't have banks. This is perfect.
Yeah.
So just being able to bring that knowledge back here can change the way the Bahamas thinks. She could then teach other young people how to get involved in these things, and then we can advance. I think we as leaders, if we have the access to the knowledge, we have to be able to share it
mm-hmm.
to the younger people and not just tell them to become doctors, become lawyers, become teachers. We have enough people in society to fill those roles. We now need the scientists. I don't know if anybody knows, but they have a part of the COVID-19 vaccine that's actually being manufactured right here in the Bahamas.
What?
Why aren't Bahamian people working on stuff like that?
Okay.
Why aren't we developing Bahamians to be those scientists? Why are we developing them to be doctors who are going to march every single day? Why can't we develop them to be the revolutionaries?
Well, so
that's what I might say. It has to start within the culture and
right.
within us developing our kids to have work ethics, to want to do more, to want to know more, and to fight for more.
So let me tell you why we keep producing doctors and lawyers, right? Because it's easy. The model has already been built.
Too easy.
The industry has already been explored, right? And so I'm going to encourage you to do that because an industry is already established with protocols and guidelines to protect you, right? As a professional. But what we're asking people to do is to explore the creation of new industries, right? And so for young people who are entrepreneurs or innovators, you have to understand that a lot of the work that you're going to be doing is cultural work, building a culture of appreciation for the industry that you're trying to create or the product that you're trying to sell. Still there, Ms. Ward?
Yes, right. I definitely agree with you. The markets are here. It's just because we don't, like I say, Aaron, because we don't have the knowledge, we don't even know how to see the market and to access the market. I was speaking to someone the other day. Trinidad makes a lot of money and Dubai make a lot of money, not only off of oil, but the parts that are used on the machinery to derive the oil, correct? Mm-hmm. So we have BTVI here now. We know that we're about to start drilling for oil. We should automatically have programs to teach children or to teach students how to either manufacture these products or to be 100% involved in these businesses that are drilling for oil or to be subsidiary businesses that benefit from the drilling of oil. So I think it has to be a movement along the home and the educational systems to be able to see the things that are happening in the community and to generate opportunities for young Bahamians.
Let me reiterate what you said just now, right? Because, well, first of all, they want to drill for oil, but I say no. And I got 1,000 Chikchanis who prepared to say no. So, but if you're going to have an oil industry, then you need to invest significant resources in creating the skill set and the talent, the expertise locally to manage that industry and to provide the services necessary for the industry to function, but also for the industry to be able to expand, right? And explore new ideas. So, all these people talking about natural resources and extracting sand, you have to begin by creating a fund or a scholarship to send people to school to train in these various areas of expertise. And then you have to establish industries with oversight capacity, right? So they understand the things that they are managing and ensuring are functioning properly. And then you got to train a group of lawyers, specifically in environmental law, so they can understand the need to explore the ethical implications of every step forward we take on the cutting edge, right? And so, like, I want young people to know. Oh, go on, Ms. Ward.
Sorry, even that lawyer becomes someone in the niche industry who could travel around the Caribbean and be an expert in that same industry. So when other countries then start drilling for their oil or digging up their sand for aragonite, that person can then travel and become that expert as well. Mm-hmm. But they can't do it if they go and become a doctor, correct?
Correct. Well, you got to go and get special certification training to practice in particular countries, right? But... you know, the most important thing is that we have to take the time to truly prepare young people for the work environment, for the labor force, for charting their own course, right? And I don't know if we're really interrogating the programs that we have in place to determine whether they are the best that we can provide for these young people. Still there?
I definitely.
All right.
Yeah, I'm here. I'm listening. I definitely agree. I think our programs, like you said, they're pretty structured and they've been the same for the past 100 years. As society and as the economy changes, our programs are not changing to match up with society. So we as a country, we're falling behind. And like I say, it's our programs, but also our skills our soft skills to work towards those programs and to be able to learn the information that those programs are actually giving out once they're implemented. So we can create the space, we can bring the programs, but we need the culture to be involved to say, I want to learn new things and I want to do different things as well.
Absolutely. So listen, here's another question I have for you. We like you just pointed out, we have academic skills, right? People who learn all the things in the book. And then we have vocational skills, which also requires people to learn all the things in the book, but also has a hands-on element, right? And then there are what we call soft skills that you just mentioned, like emotional intelligence and critical thinking and spatial awareness. So I wanted to ask, how can we teach these skills to students and new employees?
Yes. So I think these skills have to be taught at a younger age, Aaron, and not so much. Well, if they're a student, they have to be a student at, in elementary before they get to high school, because these are more, like you say, emotionally attached skills. These are leadership skills. We mm-hmm. see these leadership skills in the youth, in children. And I have a baby cousin. She is three. My other baby cousins are two and one. She is the leader. I can identify that now. Also the communication skills. I think communication skills have to be fostered for us to be able to advance. And also work ethic. Work ethic is another soft skill that we lack here in the Bahamas. And if we have work ethic and we have those other soft skills, we have the ability to develop all of the other academic skills and physical skills that we need, because we have the attitude to do it. I see here locally, when it comes to work ethic and flexibility, we have some challenges. We don't want to go above and beyond for our job. We just want to come there and get paid. So I think if we teach those soft skills at a younger age, when it comes to doing your schoolwork, when it comes to studying for tests, when you get on the job force, you'll be prepared to study for your job and be able to work for your job as well.
Let me give you an example of the working environment, right? This is a customer service story. And every time I think about the story, I retell it, like I fall out. I don't know whether to laugh or to cry, right? I got a question for you afterwards. So a few years ago, I was in a food a store looking at some food things, and I picked up this product, and there was a dead fly on the product, right? Now I was raised by good Christian people who encourage you to do the right thing when nobody is looking and to be helpful always. And it's a product that I sort of regularly buy, even though I wasn't prepared to buy it that day. And I said, man, this don't look good for the store. I pick it up. In fact, I found a piece of tissue. I picked the item up and I took it to the nearest counter, and there was a member of staff behind the counter. And I have the item in my hand with the tissue, and the tissue is placed so that when the member of staff grabs it, they could grab the item by the tissue too. And I say to the young lady, good afternoon. I saw this on the display over there, and I thought maybe, you could clean it up, or it definitely shouldn't be there. And I'm holding it out in my hand towards her, and the young lady looked at the item and looked at me and looked at the item and then looked back at me and stared at me for about 30 seconds, right? And after about 30 seconds of us staring at each other, I changed the look on my face. I like to say the tone on my face. I changed the tone on my face. And at that moment, she took the product from me. And then this is what she did. She flicked the fly on me. She flicked the fly.
On you?
She flicked the fly. Now, let me be generous and say, she flicked the fly in my general direction and it hit me, which is not hard to do considering how close we were to each other. So instead of eating her alive, I ate all of my feelings that day. I didn't have to buy any groceries. I didn't have to cook for the rest. I ate all of my feelings. Because in that moment, right?
Aaron, I know that was tough.
In that moment, I realized that it's obvious that she don't have any good sense. And she probably really, 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 really need that job. Right? Because she ain't probably...
She probably needs it the most, to be honest.
Say?
She probably needs it the most.
Right. Right. Right? And I said, here I am, unemployed, but still able to hustle around the place. Because this is a fireable fire... Boy, look here, I would have taken it to the labor board myself. And at the point, I was, I was doing my human rights advocacy, my LGBT rights advocacy, the gender equality referendum. I was getting friction and tension from left, right, and center. People is abusing me and thing. And I look at that little girl and I say, you know what? She does not deserve the wrath of 15 years of advocacy on her head today. And she probably really needs this job. So I went to someone I knew was her supervisor or above her, because that's how much I frequented the store, right? And I asked the member of staff, who was another woman, I told her what happened. And the member of staff grabbed me by my hand and asked me if I was okay and if I want to go to the manager, you know. Mm-hmm. I told her, no. As I come to you, I need you to sit down with this young lady. I need you to explain to her that somebody else would have hit her and gotten away with it. And that that's a fireable offense. And that that type of behavior is unacceptable. And that what she really needs to do is sit down seriously and think about what she's doing with her life and take this job seriously. And then I asked the supervisor to ensure that without reporting this to this particular incident to the manager, that you ensure these guys get more training. And so go on.
Always ask this question because people always say it's the teachers, the school supposed to teach them that. So where do you think, at what point in this young lady's life do you think she should have been taught just the skills of manners?
Yeah.
Because that's all it is. And I could tell you where the soft skill broke down here. It's a soft skill of flexibility and adaptability.
Mm-hmm.
Her job isn't to clean off flies off her jars. That's not her thing. So why did you come to her? So but at what point in her life should that soft skill be taught? Way before school, right?
Mm-hmm. But here's the next thing. It was her section. And although I'm sure nobody had ever told her that she is responsible for ensuring that the products on display are clean and well displayed, I think a soft skill should have told her that it's in her section and she may have some responsibility for it.
That goes with responsibility in the home as well, Erin. Mm-hmm. Like I tell you, a lot of these soft skills that create great leaders and create great workers, this starts in the home,
mm-hmm.
not at school. You could see the attitude and the work ethics that come into the elementary schools,
yeah.
more or less at college level. So I think the soft skills like leadership, teamwork, communication, problem-solving skills, flexibility and adaptability, and interpersonal skills should be taught in the home way before they get in the workforce. And employers look for these soft skills before they hire you. I think the breakdown happens when the employers just look for candidates to hire and not persons who fulfill the skills that they're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
And especially the interpersonal skills, because a lot of persons who I run into on the job, if you ask them to do something that's not in their job description, the first thing they say is, Miss, that's not in my job description.
Mm-hmm.
So as a customer, I am left stuck and I have to find someone who falls into this job description. But if we teach flexibility and adaptability as soft skills from in the home, that employee then goes over and beyond. And just like that same security guard or that manager who held your hand, they're going to go above and beyond because they were taught differently. And that's why their employers hired them. So I think soft skills need to happen more at home. It needs to be reiterated in high school and also in college when it's time for the job for us.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's just general manners.
And look here, I had the fortune of going through a summer camp program for like 13 years straight, right? From camper to counselor and training to counselor. And so I had that sort of out-of-home residential experience, right? That helped to help to teach a lot of those soft skills actually. And so that's why I recommended, like with that model earlier, that we need to take young people out of their traditional environment, put them into not a little hook boogie summer camp or, you know, weekend camp, but a well-designed, properly thought out and managed and monitored residential program where we can expose them to ideas and concepts that they won't necessarily be exposed to at home. And it also works for the hard skills as well, right? Because if I was thinking, how do I grow a tech industry or how do I support the needs of young people who say they want to move into tech, I would create a residential tech school. And I would make it residential because I want to immerse them in the culture of technology. And the first thing that has to happen is it has to be an environment where they never go offline. There's always access to power. There's always access to the internet, right? And so, like you say, for that young lady, if that's all she's learned, like, you have to grow up in a household where that type of behavior is acceptable to think that flicking a fly on somebody is acceptable.
And you have to think it's acceptable because you don't think that you're going to lose your job for doing it.
Mm-hmm.
So it has to be of the norm.
Or what's worse is that you think that there are certain types of people in society that you can behave that way towards, right? Toward. And you don't have any fear of being fired because you presume that your superiors, when they hear what happened, will say, oh, well, I understand. That's who that was. Right? And that's a part of why I sort of stuck into my intro this morning, because even Paul, like, sometimes we're not aware of how our behavior impacts the not just the community, but the development of the community. Right? Because that young lady may have thought, oh, that's Erin Green, the gay rights activist. Why is she bringing me a fly? Who she think I is? I ain't no sissy. I flicked that fly right back on her. I could easily hear that running through her head. Right? But still, I don't think that was sufficient for her to get fired. You know what I'm saying? Now, if you are a politician, if you making them big salary, if you getting an MP salary and a cabinet minister salary, right? If you getting an MP salary and a deputy prime minister perks check and a car for an office that doesn't exist, we expect far better from you. And there are no excuses, right? There are no apologies to be made. When you engage in this type of behavior or agents of yours engage in this type of behavior, you should be fired or resign. And so for me, for that young lady, I put the onus on her managers and her employers, right? Her managers and her employers let her get into that working environment and think that that was appropriate.
Agreed, because it isn't like she doesn't know better, Erin, because like I say, these skills, these same soft skills, they're not only taught at home. You encounter them again in elementary school and in high school. When you're ready for workforce prep and you go to your job, what do they call it? I think they call it where the high schoolers go to different workplaces and they have to work, job placement or something
right,
like that.
Right, right.
So they also learn soft skills there as well. And I teach three different classes at BTVI where we get you ready for workforce prep, where we teach you different soft skills. We teach you a can-do attitude. A can-do attitude is saying, hey, I can do it, and being able to go ahead and do it and then worry about it after. Being compliant and then complain later. So that way you could actually get the job done and then we can discuss things instead of just automatically saying, that isn't my job. And as you said, you even brought in politicians. And I always go back to our culture because it starts from young, and it's our parents teach us this. These people are able to act like this because the people who they're talking to believe the same thing they're believing.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I spoke to someone the other day. They say, one thing but Bahamians, all them think alike. I said, well, why would you think that? He say, no, all them think the same. And he brought up a few different examples. And I said, you know, I think that's more of a culture-based thing. We all believe if you tie a black string around your toe in the night, the spirit isn't going to bother you, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because these things were passed down. So I think these attitudes and behaviors are passed down. So that's how come we lack these certain soft skills.
Yeah.
Because the same work ethic attitude of that ain't my job. When my mother comes home and someone and her employer tells her something, she comes home with that same attitude saying, why you feel like I could do that? That ain't my job. So when I get older, I grow up with that exact same attitude.
Mm-hmm.
Not saying I'm going to outwork everybody. Not saying I'm going to be the smartest one on the job. I'm going to be the best one on the job. I'm saying I can't wait till Thursday until I get paid.
Yeah.
So the culture has to change, and we have to change our culture when it comes to flexibility, adaptability, work ethics, and just seeking new knowledge. We decide sometimes that we don't want to learn how to do better and refine where we are.
Yeah.
And I always encourage that with my classes to bring in new topics. A few weeks ago, we had a topic.
Ms. Ward, one second. Ms. Ward, For my listening audience, we are on a Zoom call, right? And that's why there's a slight delay. Thank you for bearing with us. I got to get you on again, if not next week, the week after, because we got to pick up from right where I stop you. We're going to pick up from right there. I really appreciate...
That's not a problem.
I appreciate this conversation this morning, and I would really like for us to continue it in the future. I'm so sorry. We're so out of time. It's such a great discussion, but I'm going to read some of these texts. Good morning. Have we explored the benefits of bush medicine? I'm bringing a guest on soon to discuss that. Erin, our school curriculum. Oh, wow. Has to change. By ninth grade, I should be in classes that I want to major in. You're right. We are seeing a downfall by young workers because we're telling them not to work for other people, be your own boss, but not everyone can be their own boss. Even entrepreneurs need structures and infrastructure to work within. Texter, thank you so much. Here's another text. Great show as usual. Question how politicians... Oh, sorry, read that one. Bahamians are not lazy. We are spoiled. Though I'm saying this because if a foreigner come here, they have no one to feed them, so they will work extra hard on the job and work for less. Us Bahamian... Most of us really don't have to work because we will be in mummy house until we're 60. So shelter is not a problem. Buddy, why are you talking about my life? And then he says, I would have told her, flick that fly at your ma. I cannot tell her that because, like you pointed out, I live with my mother and we must respect our mothers. Thank you for joining us, guys.
And we want to teach you.
My producer's letting me know we are out of time. Thanks for tuning in. Stay tuned for Levi and Miller with Unleashed at the 11 o'clock hour. You've been listening to Guardian 96.9 FM. You've been on the clock with Erin Green. Have a great day, Bahamas.